Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
Still reeling from the trailer, it is Pottercast number 65.
65.
65, welcome. I'm Melissa, I'm here with John.
Howdy, howdy.
And we've got a... fantabulous show for you this
fantabulous
week.
Fantabulous. Our Thanksgiving week.
Our Thanksgiving week. We're very thankful. Well, before we do anything, we have to hear from our lovely friends at Borders.
I'm very thankful for our friends at Borders.
Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Get a magical start to your holiday shopping by visiting Borders for all sorts of bewitching books, spellbinding music, and enchanting movies. Pottercast listeners can get 30% off any item at Borders by clicking on the coupon at the top of Pottercast.com. Visit BorderStores.com to locate the Borders nearest you.
There aren't quite a few Borders nearest to me.
Are there?
They are up here in Ohio where I'm vacationing or Thanksgivinging.
I never quite know where you are, John.
I am in Ohio, and I've got myself a wonderful little head cold because they went from the sweltering temperatures of 60 degrees to the chilly... mid-40s. So
poor baby.
Had a little runny nose tonight, but it's all good. It's gone now.
You just can't stay well.
I cannot stay well. It's very sad pandas for
all
the whole gang.
Alright, well, that should satisfy this week's off-topic chatter because
that
we
is
know
it.
How
That's
terrible
all you're gonna have.
It is, if we have
That's
2
it.
Minutes of off-topic chatter.
Nope, we went clocked in on 140 there.
Horrible! Anyway, this week we have for you the return of Canon Conundrums.
Canon Conundrums.
What's it about this week, John?
This week is all about you stupid lady, because you could have told me.
I knew you weren't going to know. I knew it. I wanted to get you back.
This week's Canon Conundrums is all about snakes.
Snakes. Nagini. Whether Nagini is a Horcrux, is that right?
Yeah, Nagini being a Horcrux is certainly up for... what we discussed, and lots of other things regarding Nagini.
But Canon Conundrums is not the big news this week. The big news this week is that
Boom.
We have for you an Extendable Ears with the people over at Electronic Arts.
Yes.
The wonderful people over at Electronic Arts who had our video game liaison, Donna Hosey, who runs our gallery elves. She kind of organizes all the
massive
the
galleries.
Stuff. It goes on in the huge, what is it, like 70,000 images now or something?
Bigger
there?
Than any gallery online by a third.
Is it?
All right.
Oh, wow. I don't even know these things. Thanks, John.
No,
but she went over to the EA Studios. It is the only interview like this you're going to find with them, actually.
Under the same roof.
Under the same roof. She knows them already because she's interviewed them before. She's been our liaison since the beginning. She's been dealing with all the fans' questions. She's been dealing in the fans' council. There is nobody better to do this interview than Donna, and she has done a fantastic job. So thank you to her, and thank you to the people at EA for actually cutting this together for us.
They
presented us with a beautiful little MP3 file. It was fantastic.
They did some work.
It's really great. I'm so proud. It's so good that we're going to have it in two installments.
Yes.
Half this week, half the next.
And we apologize in advance, of course, for not waiting to give this to you until the transcript was done.
I know, we're terrible.
We know there are some of you who actually enjoy listening to things before you have the opportunity to read them, but
we do our best. It makes
you
laugh.
We do what we can.
Because if we didn't have this audio format, not even maybe a quarter of the interviews we do would be available.
We wouldn't possibly have time to do it that way.
When people complain that we don't have a transcript available immediately, I just laugh. Anyway, other quick announcements. Podcast Alley, make sure to go over and vote for us. But you guys have been voting for us.
You guys have been doing
incredible.
Awesome.
Wow. But, yeah, if you have it, join the revolution. Join the, don't be left out. It's the new fad.
Yeah, you don't want to be left out of this one, guys. This is the hottest thing since, I don't... shoes.
It's hottest since John's meatballs. Okay.
Yes.
We have, our t-shirts are on sale until the end of the year. We have a little announcement from our little t-shirt master, Sam.
Yeah.
To let you know that you don't need to use PayPal to get the t-shirts.
Awesome.
Apparently there are a lot of questions about that. You don't need to use PayPal. Go to the t-shirts link from podcast.com. There's a link that says t-shirt gear.
Yeah.
Or podcast gear or podcast whatever. Also,
a little more than a month left on those guys.
Right. Also, speaking of elves, speaking of transcripts, if you are interested in being a transcript elf, email us at staff@podcast.com with transcript elf in the subject line. And once again, another reminder that we will be live at Phoenix Rising, the Harry Potter convention in New Orleans, May 17th to the 20th. Go to thephoenixrises.org to register. Anybody who registers is free to come to the podcast, so go for that now.
Hi everyone, here are the latest in Harry Potter news headlines for you. Film news completely rules the news this week as the barrage of new images, photos, and reports from the upcoming Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix continues. Many new photos from the set of Phoenix surfaced over at MTV last week, bringing our first look at the magical fountain in the Ministry of Magic, a fabulous cover of the Daily Prophet newspaper with the headline trumpeting Dumbledore, daft or dangerous, very cool. And we also saw a photo even of the writing on the back of Harry's hand from his detention with Umbridge. Along with these photos, we have many new video clips from the entertainment media reports from the set of the fifth Harry Potter movie, which include new interviews with actor Dan Radcliffe, filming at King's Cross Station, and also on the set of the Ministry of Magic, all of which are available for viewing and download in our video galleries. Our own Melissa and John, along with Andrew from MuggleNet, were lucky enough to go to the set of the Order of the Phoenix, and they have released their teaser report via the Leaky Mug podcast, which you can find on iTunes or the Leaky Mug website. Finally, Steve Vander Ark also went to the set, and he has posted a snippet of his visit, including a bit about that tapestry at Grimmauld Place, which JKR herself designed. Very cool. And you can read this at our Flu partner, the Harry Potter Lexicon. Most striking, however, in all this new information was the preview of The Order of the Phoenix, which came from HBO On Demand, that brought some truly fantastic new footage. The new images included many movie spoilers, including our first look at the archway in the Veil Room and a quick glimpse of Sirius and Bellatrix fighting. We also saw our first look at Lucius Malfoy as he is holding the prophecy globe, as well as first looks at sketches of Grop, the Thestrals, even our first clip of Umbridge talking to him, as well as Luna, and much more. Please note that we do caution you, as there are a large amount of spoilers contained in this otherwise truly exciting preview, which we do have available for download in our video galleries. You can always find the most extensive collection on the net of screen caps, photos, and Harry Potter-related videos, all at LeakyNews.com. And one other film-related bit of news now, EA, the makers of Harry Potter video games, officially announced that they are at work on the Order of the Phoenix video game, which will be released next summer on all platforms. In addition to this announcement, we also got some great new screenshots of how realistic the trio, Cho, and even Snape will look in this new game. Later in this broadcast, we will have much more on this very exciting game, so stay tuned. Finally, actor Dan Radcliffe sent out his Christmas message to fans, kicking off the charity drive held by danradcliffe.com and danradcliffe.co.uk for Demelza House, a children's hospice in the UK that Dan supports. In this new message, Dan mentioned how he is looking forward to next year's plays Equus and his new film My Boy Jack. He also mentions Phoenix, of course, noting that, quote, David Yates was an inspired director who I would walk on hot coals to work with again, end quote. Very cool. Well, for all the latest in Harry Potter news, you can always find it at LeakyNews.com, which is updated daily. And now, back to the show.
Okay, well, John.
What is
Sue's
up?
Not with us, as we've noticed.
But there's one without us today. Sue is not with us. Well, you know, it's impressive enough we were able to come together on Thanksgiving week, the two of us. But
yeah.
But
well, what do we have in the news this week? Let's see. Dan Radcliffe. I want to talk about that for a sec.
Okay.
Dan Radcliffe sent out a newsletter in which he sends out one now and then to his fans and his two big fan sites, danradcliffe.com and danradcliffe.co.uk.
Yeah, I usually proofread them for him. He sends them to me first.
I know. Well, he sent out his regular newsletter with a new picture. And
aww. What's it of?
Him.
He sends pictures of himself?
John.
I should do that.
It's what his fans want.
Aww.
Okay.
Maybe my fans want that.
Silence.
Probably not. You see, they have spoken. You know, it's like that one guy who, for Christmas, will give somebody a picture of themselves in a nice picture frame. Just be like, here I am. This is me.
Oh, God.
You know those guys? I know a guy like that.
Okay, anyway, here is a very interesting line. Dan Radcliffe says, David Yates was an inspired director who I would walk on hot coals to work with again.
Mm.
That is some pretty intense language, Dan.
Which is ironic because we know that Dan will be walking on coals to find one of the Horcruxes in the seventh installment.
Did Joe tell
you? She did tell me that, yeah.
Insert orange text here so that we can show you're kidding.
Insert orange text. Yes.
We had the best comment ever on the Leaky Main page, that somebody said that they couldn't tell when John was joking or not. So in the transcripts, we should have a blue for when John's not joking and orange for when John is joking.
A little cheat sheet of sorts here.
Cheat sheet.
We'll give the elves a heart attack, or Alex for having to program colors into the transcripting section of podcast.com.
You know, across the board, we're hearing what a fabulous actor's director David Yates is.
No, yeah. Absolutely. Everybody seems to be having great things to say about him, which is very encouraging because not many people know about this guy.
No, he came out of
nowhere.
About
his work. Yeah.
I mean, Emma Watson said that he showed her how to find truth, which I think a lot of directors would argue is pretty much the core of acting.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's encouraging. Oh, really encouraging.
Just makes me even more excited.
I never thought I'd be this excited for the fifth film.
Really?
I really thought this was going to be the one I would dread.
No, you know, it wasn't particularly one of my favorite books. Well, some parts of it, actually, I have some of my favorite chapters of the whole series are in that book. Like, when Dumbledore flees his office. And he doesn't really flee. I mean, he takes everybody out and then just kind of leaves. But, you know, that's one of the coolest chapters. And then, you know, his battle with Voldemort, yeah. Probably the most high-action chapter we may ever get in this whole series.
I don't know. I think the last, the big climax of Book 7
I still have a little part in my mind that says we're not going to have a huge climax like that, at least not with Harry. Perhaps the other people might fight a big battle, but I think Harry's battle is going to be more intimate than something huge like the Voldemort-Dumbledore battle.
Well, it won't be that show of skill, that show of effortless skill.
Yeah.
You know, with Harry, there might be a big war going on. I still think it's going to be a Hogwarts.
I think it could be a Hogwarts, and there could be fighting this big battle without Voldemort and Harry is just going to have a battle of the minds with this guy, and that'll be the end of it, but...
All right, well...
Yeah, at least we'll probably see some action with everybody else. I'm sure there's got to be.
All right, well, we are totally... We're
Woo!
Off topic.
Way to fly
but
off the handle
of
there.
Order of the Phoenix, another big bit of news. If you haven't, go over to LeakyMug.com or update your iTunes feed for the Leaky Mug.
Yep.
Me and John and Andrew just put out the first, or well, the only, our little set preview of the, yes. Our Order of the Phoenix set report, which is going to be out... In many, many parts once we can do it, probably the week or so before the film comes out or the weeks following the film's release.
Mm-hmm. And, gosh, you know, it's a concern always to write about something or talk about something so long since you had experienced it. And we did record some things while we were there from certain spots, and we recorded some things like the... A couple days after we finished it somewhere else, but it's amazing how quick it all comes back to you when you talk about it, even as, you know, late as we did for this recording here. So something, an experience like that just stays with you, and it's memories that are just picture perfect and clarity in your mind. You can see this stuff again so easily. So we'll have a lot more to talk about with all that stuff.
Speaking of stuff that we may or may not have seen in the trailer, we were talking last week about a ship that the Order of the Phoenix flies by.
Yeah.
We should thank all our many, many readers who wrote in to let us know, listeners who wrote in to let us know that that is actually the HMS Belfast.
Oh.
Thank you, people. And yes, we know it's the Tower Bridge and not the London Bridge, but you can't blame us because everybody calls the London Bridge. It's so bad. That is the biggest, probably one of the biggest misconceptions. The bridge that
the
you
London
see
bridge.
That is commonly thought of as the London Bridge is not the London Bridge. It's the Tower Bridge. The London Bridge is actually in America. I think it's in Arizona.
I blame I blame Fergie for that one. And her god-awfully annoying song.
Her song?
Ugh. The London Bridges things where she's dancing with the guys with the big furry black hats on in the video, and she's doing the thing with her arm. You've seen that, haven't you?
I have not.
Oh, God, they play that song all the time.
Okay.
Like, how come every time you come round my London Bridge is coming down or something? God, you never heard that?
No, I never have.
Oh, man, I run out of the room with my hands over my head.
Okay. On that note, speaking of running out of the room with our hands over our head, I think it's time to go, how about we go right over to Canon Conundrums, and then after that, the big Electronic Arts interview. Dun, dun, dun.
Sweet. Okay.
Later, folks.
Talk to you soon.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums, featuring special guest Steve Vander Ark from the Harry Potter Lexicon. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
And we're back with Canon Conundrum.
Yes, thank goodness.
The whole darn gang, except Melissa had to go check on the cat, so
yes.
we'll continue on in her steed, or stead. Or
steed.
Yeah.
Is it Steed?
Is it Shout Out to Steed?
Hi, Steed!
How's it going? Yeah, it's funny because he actually is assigned this segment this week.
There you go.
I'll be done.
We love you!
So, what are we going to be talking about for Steve to edit this week?
We're talking about snake lore.
Snape or snake?
Snake. I'm tired.
Sounds eerily similar there, Mr. Steve.
Yeah. I think
there's plenty of snake lore out there.
We definitely don't want to talk about that.
there's whole podcasts out there.
Really?
Just about snake lore.
Yes,
some very interesting
to
stories
one.
I hear.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
They rock. Hi, Snapecast people. We love you. Don't ignore them. So
we do love the Snapecast, but this is the Snakecast. let's hear a little
name.
Bit about it from Stevo. Everything in the book's about
snakes.
I want
snakes.
Everything
well,
in the lexicon
okay,
about
well,
snakes.
First, before we even do that, though, we should talk about why we're even talking
mm-hmm.
about snake lore out of the sun out of nowhere.
That's
so,
probably a good idea.
Tell us.
Oh, because our friends over at Osseo Quote, Miss Lisa. And she found some fantastic old video of an old interview with Joe and Stephen Fry. I think it was recorded. It looked like it was recorded on the Hogwarts Express. I don't know, but they were talking. It was very old, and the video quality is not that good, but you can hear the audio very good.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, Joe was speaking about the importance of snake lore in Book 7.
Yeah.
Way back then, many, many years ago, that Joe was talking about this. And
so when exactly was this interview? I mean, at which point in the books was she saying this?
Oh, this is way before. I think this was.
Is this before Book 3?
2002, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is quite an old
interview.
Well,
if it's 2002, then it's between books 4 and 5.
Five, right.
Okay.
She had not done that. Just fantastic video. We have it up for the gallery, so you shall be sure and check that out.
The video gallery, video.leakycauldron.org.
I thought it was really interesting, given that time frame, way back then, that Joe was speaking about.
Mm-hmm. About what? Horcruxes? I mean, is she talking about Nagini the Horcrux? And
she didn't know anything about Horcruxes
until
2000.
Oh, you think she's making this up as she goes along, John?
She was at that very moment toying between Horcrux and Horcree.
Exactly.
Oh, no!
Googling them both.
No, don't say that!
She was at some kind of party, and someone came up to her and said, what if Voldemort, hid his soul in some random object?
Like a snake.
I've been looking for an idea.
Because Voldemort's not the brightest bulb in the Christmas tree light string there, so.
Yeah. That theory kind of bugs me. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you put it in a living creature?
Yeah, right. You know,
because
the next morning the living creature has fled the coop, and there you go. There went my Horcree crux, whatever.
He's a sleep slitherer.
No.
He just kind of runs away all the time.
Bird of prey comes flying by.
How long do snakes even live? You know,
yeah.
How long do snakes?
700
They
years.
Do not. That's just the
magical ones do.
But he is not magical, is he?
Ask anybody.
Ask.
It's a basilisk. Of course it's a magical.
Yeah. Okay, then. All right.
Is it? Do we know if Nagini's a basilisk?
No, I don't think he's a
basilisk.
Yeah.
We'd have all these people turning to stone all around.
Right. That'd be crazy. Cool. It'd be like Narnia over there.
That's right.
There's Baltimore, frozen solid, going, oh, dang, knew it. Why did I choose a basilisk?
Baltimore has special sunglasses.
Yeah, there you go.
Baltimore has a special shade.
Yeah, special anti-basilisk shade. No, Nagini is not. Nagini is...
No.
I think we're book seven. I think my theory on the snake lore... Snake... I can't even say it.
What does the word lore mean?
Lore, my theory is that like Nagini and the boa constrictor from book one are going to hit it off. That's what I think.
It's going to be another
shipping book. Just
thus,
like book
and they live snakily ever after.
And while
Lord of
Voldemort is possessing Nagini, and so he feels love, and that's what kills him.
Nagini's going to turn her tail on him,
boys.
So to speak.
Boys.
Oh, jeez. What do you think Joe wanted us to think about?
As opposed to their mating ritual, I
think part of it has to do with Harry's ability to speak Parseltongue.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not you can actually control Nagini, or he can like talk to him, say, hey, help me out here, or get a little secret clue
so he can use Nagini as a either a spy, or if he is a Horcrux carrying snake.
Yeah.
He can maybe, tell him, why don't you just, give me your Horcrux or something.
Give me your Horcrux. Spit it out.
No, he is.
Right in my hand.
Give me that piece of soul. I need that.
You're not using it.
Snape wears around his neck.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think
a little chain.
There may, you may be onto something there, Sue. I don't know that he can tell, if he tries to tell Nagini to do something,
mm-hmm.
Nagini going to obey him. Maybe...
Of course not.
Well, I've heard some interesting ideas, just reading up on one of the threads on the lounge before this, and somebody was talking about how when Harry killed the basilisk, he was, he got the blood all over him, and that was, could be seen sort of as like some kind of ritual where he's kind of infused or something with, this power of like the King of Serpents, and, Nagini maybe can sense that, and, there's some that would... give him a feeling like, oh, this is, a powerful person someone who defeated, the mighty basilisk. And
Or the exact opposite. Oh my God, the guy killed the basilisk.
Yeah.
He's our mortal enemy.
Yeah. What's Nagini's allegiance to Voldemort anyway?
Really? Yeah, that's a really good question. Why is he...
I mean, are we assuming that Nagini is more intelligent than your average snake, which I don't think is, saying much.
All right.
This is true.
Well, yeah, we don't know, but I think it has to do with more that Nagini senses that Voldemort's, he's the heir of Slytherin. I think that personally has
probably.
It's hard to say, what would motivate a snake, if a snake does have a certain intelligence.
Yeah.
But
how many humans has Nagini probably ever spoken to in her life before? Let alone the magical people. I would probably, if I was a snake, you don't have that exciting of a life. If you had a human come talk to you that could do magical things, I'd probably follow the human.
I wonder if he can
too.
Imperious the snake, too. I don't even know.
He inhabits it Book 5.
That's kind of like the ultra imperial.
Right.
To get inside someone's
That's
body.
That's like being John Nagini.
That'd be nuts. John exclamation point Nagini?
Yeah.
Or John...
Well, moving away from this spot, that image just kind of flips me out a little bit too much, John. But, we're talking about the basilisk before. I just think, too, that it has to do with that Chamber of Secrets. I just think that there's something more to it.
Yeah, I hope they get that down.
I don't know if we'll go back down there, or I don't know.
I just hope we hear more. I think... The Parseltongue stuff, probably one of the cooler things that doesn't really get explored too much other than the book it was introduced.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It was pretty prominent in book six.
Right.
The whole conversation with Morphin and with the Gaunt family.
Well, I've only read the book once, and it was in about 4 hours. So I don't... Leave me alone.
Okay.
You should really think about reading it again, then, John.
Go for it, John.
But that does explain a few things.
It's not like I'm on a show that requires me to know this thing.
It's part of the mystique.
No. I think that it would be awesome if, like, the parcel tongue stuff could be used for, like, special spells that only parcel tongues can do, because incantations.
Interesting, right.
Like, spells that Salazar may have made up back in his day.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And that Harry is going to learn all these cool spells that Dumbledore was meaning to teach him in Book 6 and didn't get around to. And he'll find all those spell books in Dumbledore's office.
Stupid Dumbledore.
See,
don't say that.
I'm so fascinated by the Four Founders. That is my thing. And I think that Slytherin, you could be onto something there, John, though, about Slytherin and the snakes. And maybe it has to do with them going back into the chamber. Or, one thing that fascinates me is that what happened to Slytherin after he left the four, the other three?
Yeah, that's true.
And what we're talking about, Durmstrang, like Victor Krum may pop back up, and this is just all tangentially related, but follow me. But I was just thinking, one of my favorite theories is that Slytherin went off and founded Durmstrang, and that there's snakes there, and all that. Because she's like, you remember, maybe it was just, maybe I'm getting the stupid movie in, but do you remember how, like, when the Durmstrang students came in and they put down their thing and the thing was a snake that came around and everywhere you went there were snakes?
Oh.
You know?
I thought it was a dragon.
Was it? Was it a dragon? Okay, well then.
I mean the kid that blows
the
fire?
You
thinking of
Lucius's cane again?
Was I on that? I'm always thinking about that, but we'll move right along there. But I don't know. I'm just thinking that somehow there's got to be some reason that Harry has this power still that's going to be able to help him, I think. Book 7. I don't know.
I could see them, maybe Harry and Voldemort having, a parcel tongue conversation for some reason.
Ooh,
you know,
really
kind of
fun.
Like an ultimate confrontation that no one else
would be cool, Jason.
Could be privy to.
That'd be really fun. Because I think that, the way Harry's going to kill Voldemort is going to be through the mind connection anyway. He's not even going to have to use any spells on the guy. He's just going to just sit here and think about that night before with Jenny and Voldemort's coat. So maybe he could do it with parcel tongue. Maybe he could talk to him with a parcel tongue through his mind. That'd be kind of neat.
I don't know. I like that theory, Jason. John. I don't know. Whoever said that about them having speaking parcel tongue. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what...
That'd be a really cool scene.
Yeah, I think it would be very neat, like, in a book or in a movie. But, I don't know what the point of it would necessarily be, but it just sort of appeals to me, like, it's like,
cool.
These are the two guys who can do it, and they're going to face off in their sort of snaky way.
And it's like the sloppiest language.
Yes.
Spitting everywhere. Can you imagine? That'd be so fun.
Yeah. I don't know, but maybe it has to do with the past, though, about finding those Horcruxes, that his ability to speak parcel tongue would lead him to where he's hidden the other Horcruxes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the snakes obviously have so much to do with Slytherin and with Voldemort, and, maybe it's not so much, I think there are all these practical things that probably will play in, like Nagini has a part to play almost surely, maybe the chamber again, but there's also just a lot of symbolism about, snakes and legends that, she might borrow from because she always, does that kind of thing. Snakes can mean so many different things. It can, mean like sort of a shedding of a your former life and some kind of, big change. They can, be obviously very deadly if they bite you, but they also, kind of have like a healing symbolism in certain cultures and certain traditions that, so there's a lot of different directions that she could take that. And I don't know, I tend to think, this goes back to the idea of the houses uniting. And I tend to think that there's this good side of Slytherin that like has just been buried for so long.
Right.
And that like something's got to, maybe there'll be like some good snake qualities or something that have to be discovered somehow.
What
is that?
Oh, go ahead, John.
This is a weird question. What's that? The symbol? I think they use it for like medicines or things medical, where the snake is wrapped around the staff or something.
Right.
What is that about? What? Why? Anybody know the story behind that?
I don't know if it's related to the Moses story where he raises up the snake in the desert and the people who were bitten, like if they look at the snake on the staff or something.
That's right. That's right.
Healed.
Oh. Well, look at you. It's too smart for that.
Well, but you know, and this isn't it. Well, speaking of healing, though, Voldemort uses Nagini, right, the milk, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is actually venom.
Oh, it's not, it's
although,
not
I actually thought it's it was milk at first.
No. Oh, that's why we have Hershey's syrup.
Okay, I don't know.
No, I was the same way as
the
you
hard
two.
Part
I was like,
finding them little udders.
I was like, what? How does he milk a snake?
Okay, I give up. Forgive me for being stupid there. Okay, it's late. But okay, so
the same way you milk a cat.
These are the things I learned from my reading group.
See, I give up. I give up. I'm stupid. Okay, but my question is, though, do you think that Nagini can, like, there'll be a potion or something from this venom that will be of use somehow along the way to defeat Voldemort?
What if they capture Nagini and, like, force it to, like, tell it secrets?
Yeah.
If they find a way, like, Harry's going to just sit there and, like, talk to it and be like, tell me what you know about the Horcruxes. And Nagini will maybe tell him the
I'm a snake. I can't understand that kind of thing. I'm an animal. I do not have like, higher-level cognizant power because I'm a snake.
They could. It's a
basically,
it's, snake. Come on.
He's just going to sit there
it's
and say,
snake.
I want dead mouse. You know, that'd be about it.
I wonder what happens
if
to snake a
snake. Is smart enough to know
Harry
where
says,
his own
you know,
home is.
I really want to talk to you about the Horcrux. And he's doing it in Parseltongue, which is why I'm making that voice. I want to talk to you about the Horcrux.
I thought it was just because you're
tired. And he looks at him, I want dead rat. You know,
yeah.
So that's it right there.
Oh, come on. Harry talks to the snake in book one, and the snake understands when he's asking about where it came from.
Right.
From Burma. No,
it didn't come from Burma. It came from Brazil.
Brazil and Burma. It's the same country. Look at my sign. Here it is. This is where I'm from. I'm going to leave the cage. I'm going to say thank you because I'm a nice snake. Snakes know what's going on. More than just, I want dead rat.
Live rat.
Live rat.
Well, what do you think happens to a snake when it's possessed by, you know, a crazy wizard? Like, does he leave any kind of trace of himself in there, or does it change the
little
snake?
Head, little head flopping away on the back of the snake.
Yeah, right. Ew. Moldy,
well,
moldy.
But Voldemort has so much, I mean, he is like a mutant blob thing, so, I don't know if he's got, you know, we're talking about Mr. Blood. What Voldemort's got flowing through him would be snake venom, so.
I mean, it seems like the Nagini and Voldemort are so tied up in each other. Like, he, you know, was ingesting snake venom to stay alive, and then Nagini has been, you know, possessed on numerous occasions by Voldemort, and they hang out together, and
that's
the closest thing he has to, like, a pet or to a companion, you know.
Do you think it hurts Nagini to have Voldemort inside of it as much as it hurt Harry? Harry was about ready to die for that thing.
Yeah,
he was like,
true.
Oh, get out of me.
I don't think it was just, I mean, Voldemort was not just possessing him, he was trying to hurt him while he was in there, right?
Right.
Yeah,
because it didn't hurt Quirrell unless he wanted to cause him pain.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Although that was a different sort of possession in a way.
It was. It was. I was just thinking that too when I was talking about the little head flopping on the back of the snake.
Right.
You know, we've seen two kinds of possession because, you know, the Quirrell one is just sort of, or was that just dramatic effect?
Well.
Well, and he wasn't really a full wizard at that time. He was just kind
it's
of
like he was living there.
Blob.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah, he was.
So I wonder what happens to
Voldemort's
body.
Well, and he said that back
when he was
living in the forests of Albania, he would inhabit, you know, the
rats,
the bodies of small creatures. So,
sure,
that's true. Good point.
It's just, I guess it's different when it's like you're. Well, what we don't exactly know, when Dumbledore wrapped him up in his, you know, little water shell thingy, if Voldemort disappeared and then possessed Harry, or what if the exact same thing happened like in Godric's Hollow, where Dumbledore essentially dies and his essence is floating around and possesses Harry. Did I say Dumbledore dies? I meant Voldemort.
Because Dumbledore
dies.
His
little essence it floats around and possesses Harry, and then they probably, what if they had to use a Horcrux again to revive himself after the Ministry battle?
Maybe.
Because I personally think that he had to use the Horcrux after God's
like they had to brew up a Voldemort potion again? Or...
Yeah.
You're saying... say that again. What did you say about Godric's Hollow?
I think he died in Godric's Hollow as much as you can die when you have Horcruxes
out
there.
He was bound, like his spirit or whatever was...
So, are you saying that he used up one of his Horcruxes, got it
but
back?
But they don't get used up.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I didn't think they did, but that's an interesting theory. I mean, if you have seven Horcruxes, does that mean you get seven chances, and each time you're going to go find a Horcrux and kind of got to recharge?
Well, each time you have seven, so you can eventually have, seven or six backup, lives.
But I don't think they, like,
and if you die with one of those souls inside of you, that thing is toast, just like one person's soul would be toast from an Avada Kedavra thingy-majigger.
I thought it had more to do
or
with
Dementor's sucking.
Tying the soul to Earth, and then you just, you kind of have to find a body again. I never got the impression that, it's sort of like having, lives in Super Mario Brothers where,
exactly.
You die, one of them goes away.
Lives.
I don't think it's quite
little
like
green
that.
Mushroom.
Bum, 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 ba, da, da, ba, da,
one up.
There goes another Horcrux.
Because you gotta figure, Voldemort, his plan was to, live, if not forever, a super long time. Mm-hmm. He didn't split it into seven pieces because, it'll make it that much harder for the person coming to destroy me. You figure, I'll die, from however I'm going to die, and then I go back and use the next one, and then I live a life with that one, and then I die, and I get the other one, and live a life that way.
Well, I guess that's probably something we could debate for hours.
I still have not resolved, though, if Nagini is actually a Horcrux.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea.
The only thing that even makes it me believe it for a second is that Dumbledore seems to think it, and he's not always right, but
he is.
But he also
Dumbledore seems to think it's a Horcrux or thinks that it's important.
No,
it's possible. He thought it was possible,
right.
but he didn't think it's always though to put something into a living creature or something like that.
But it was like best guess, apparently, unless he didn't want to tell Harry what his best guess was.
Right. Well,
that it's him.
What is this possibility? Is it possible that maybe the heir of Slytherin has control over snakes in a way like a master-slave relationship and that Nagini is being forced to serve Voldemort maybe against its will?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that Harry could take advantage of that and maybe release the Nagini slave similar to the way he released the Dobby
from
the Malfoy?
I thought, when I started thinking about this, that Nagini could have been controlled by Voldemort.
Give Nagini
as opposed to just talking,
a coat.
But I don't know, John. That's interesting.
Well, that'd be kind of cool if, we had Nagini fighting on Harry's side towards the end.
Yeah.
I wonder, because I don't know. The basilisk would obey Riddle, but not Harry, because it knew that, I don't know, was it because he was the heir of Slytherin or... because he could compel him in some way, or just because the basilisk was raised to, obey this guy.
I think it'd be really cool if it was, some sort of enslavement because he was the heir of Slytherin. Like if Harry gives him his other sock, then the snake can come and help fight with Harry. I think that'd be cool. Can you imagine the snake wearing the little sock at the end of its tail?
Give him Hagrid's sock. You might keep him a little warmer.
Oh, the very tip.
I keep thinking about the scene in Order of the Phoenix when right after Harry sort of has the vision or the dream or whatever, sees himself as Nagini striking Arthur Weasley in the corridor. And then, Dumbledore does something with his weird little spinny things in his office and some smoke comes out and he sees, a snake.
Yes.
And then he sees it turn into two snakes and...
Right.
I could never figure out if that was supposed
divided.
To have something to do with that book or if that was a clue to something further down the road. That seemed to mean something to him. And I'm sure Joe put it there for a reason. It wasn't just made
huge.
Up. But what is it?
That's hugely important. That means that they are the same being, but in essence divided.
Uh-huh.
And if one half of that being is gone, the other one's toast too.
Oh, so it's Mr. Blood. Or...
Well, not necessarily Mr. Blood, but...
I think it was about a choice,
that
though,
if one dies, they're both dead.
Has to do with Harry and Voldemort being the two snakes.
It's either that, or it's like they have to cut off this other piece of themselves to really live a life, which is, I guess, the prophecy.
Right. But I think it's, too, about the choices, too. I mean, that Harry is not going to, you know, can be separated from Voldemort, even though that scar... as a physical reminder that he's not. I still think that theme of your choices is going to have to play with in this last book too, big time.
I mean, as that scar, I tell you, that's why Dumbledore didn't want to remove it, even if he could. He's a wise man. That's how Harry's going to kill him, is through that darn link. Oh, but it's the snake cast.
Yes, it is.
We should wrap it up.
Okay,
let's do some final thoughts on snakes.
All right. We don't have any.
I'll start with my reiterating my fun crazy is that Nagini is with Voldemort against its will because Voldemort is the heir of Slytherin and controls all the snakes, and Harry is gonna come figure out a way to rescue Nagini, and Nagini is gonna ride along with Harry. And
so you think Nagini is gonna fight in the final battle. Huh?
Yes. The battle is going to look just like, you know, the battle in Chronicles of Narnia when they're all coming in clashing.
Yeah,
like that.
Right.
Everybody is all lined up.
Oh, I really think
Harry's
there's
going to
be something like that. I've said that before. I really see some big confrontation.
I hope to God, but I
Groth
don't
comes,
think so.
You know, stumbling out of the...
Oh, God.
And fights off, like, 20 other giants.
Yeah.
It'll be right in the Hogwarts grounds. They're all going to come out of the forest. They'll be like, oh, there's the giants. Who are they going to fight for? And then they do it. Oh, there's the trolls. Oh, there are the pigs. Or whoever else is going to come out of there.
Flying pigs. Weasley's flying pigs.
Cool. All right, who's next?
Boy.
Go ahead, Jason.
All right, well, I don't even know what I'm going to say. I think there must be some practical aspects to this, but I think there's a lot to do with, like, more of the symbolic aspect of it. I think the snakes are all tied up in Slytherin and who, you know, as the supposed heir of Slytherin, who Voldemort is, and that Slytherin is, like, due to undergo some big change, and that there's some symbolism with, you know, this kind of snake rebirth and, you know, kind of new life aspect that, you know, Voldemort's kind of the old way, and somehow Slytherin, I don't know, you know, I don't even know what it means, but I just think that there's, that it has a lot more to do with symbolism, maybe, than with something practical.
Well, see, there are times when I get into this mode where I just think it's all a lot simpler than we make it.
Maybe.
You know? So I look at that and I think, you know, what was she thinking about back then? Well, we know she didn't have the word Horcrux at that time, but we know that she was working toward the idea of having pieces of souls and things like this, and I think that she was thinking at that time one of the pieces of souls is going to be in the snake. You know, and I think that's what she's referring to when she refers to snake lore. Now, I think, you know, I think it's just really foolish of Voldemort to do that, but there are a lot of things Voldemort does which I think are really foolish, so, you know. Yeah. I mean, the best villain in the whole book is Snape, so.
Yeah, well, he does a lot of things out of pride, and he maybe just thought, how cool would it be if it was in this cool looking snake.
Yeah. So I guess that's where I'm at. I really kind of think it's not going to be so complicated and convoluted and everything like that. It's going to be more just a matter of, well, she's talking about Nagini or being a Horcrux. And then, of course, how Harry's going to get that Horcrux and destroy it, I guess, is going to have to kill Nagini. So there you go.
You're saying it's convoluted for Harry to free the snake from its enslavement with the heir of the Slytherin and...
No, I'm not, John. No, I'm not saying that's convoluted and complicated at all. Of course, you know, but I'm just saying an alternative non-convoluted and complicated theory would be mine, which is that there's going to be this Horcrux thing, you know. So
your brain runs circles around my little one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do run the lexicon after all.
Oh well, someone's got to do it.
Yeah. I don't actually do anything.
Go ahead, Sue.
My theory, my thinking is that it has to do with the past, because Harry has to go, I think, to the past in order to defeat Voldemort and finding those Horcruxes, and I think it has to do with Slytherin himself and Harry's ability to speak parcel tongue. Mm. Will help somewhere in the
Are you saying he goes all the way back to the
Are you saying he's going to go back in time?
That would be a hardcore.
That would be really cool.
I think that there's a reason that Joe keeps bringing those guys in suddenly, that those four guys...
Harry's going to go back and talk to Slytherin, and he's going to be like, you know, I didn't want all this. I'm not a bad guy. My snake wasn't supposed to kill muggles.
That would fix so many things. That would be like so... Salazar could train Harry
but
how to fight.
Wait. Time travel is a very dangerous thing. Time travel, you know, what if you do stuff like, you know, it's like throw rocks and hit people in the head, which you should never do if you're time traveling. That's one of the rules of time. Oh, Sue, I just, like, you mentioned he's going to go back to the past, and, like, all of us are, what a great idea. Joe, you listening?
No, Harry's gonna go.
How about you have him go back in time? And he could go back and like, well, of course, if he could go back in time, why doesn't he just go back and kill Voldemort, you know?
Ooh, well, no, he'll run to Forrest from Blatts and grab the book on Quidditch scores from the past 50 years. And then he'll come back and be a good
Hit him over the head with it.
Now, that's good
I just think that there's too much about Scorpio. Not even, oh, man. Can we go?
Really.
Get out of here. 30 minutes is too much for Steve.
It's, for me.
Steve, all right. Not Steve.
All right.
Oh, okay, right. Steve. Sorry, I thought you meant me. Wow.
Well, thanks for listening to us ramble on about snakes.
Snapes.
Next week, we'll have another fun topic for you for Canon Conundrums.
Yeah, and between now and then, please dig into your old VHS tapes and find those odd interviews that have been missing for years, so we've got more things to talk about.
Absolutely.
Actually,
oh, dear.
Let's,
speaking of that.
What do you want us to talk about? We've gotten about down to... hitting most of these canon conundrums. Leave us some comments in the usual ways, like you usually do, and help us out. Let's hear what you want to hear about discussed on Canon Conundrum 65 and beyond.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yay! That'd be good. Really cool.
All right, gang, let's push on out of here.
All right.
Great.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Time to put on our extendable ears. Listen in on Potter Talk from the people making the magic. Hi there, Pottercast listeners. This is Donna Hosey, and this week's Extendable Ears interview is brought to you from the EA Games headquarters in England. I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Birch and Justin Manning. Hi, both of you.
Hi.
Who are both producers of the Order of the Phoenix computer game, which will be released to coincide with the film release next July. Now, as some of you will be aware, we at Leaky are involved in a fans council, which has been set up by EA and Warner Brothers. And since August, we've been taking your questions, queries and suggestions for the Order of the Phoenix game. I now have a ridiculously long list, which has been compiled with the help of many of you listening. And so today, EA have invited me back and I will attempt to grill them mercilessly about what we can expect in the Order of the Phoenix game. First of all, Justin. Could you just explain briefly what was the idea behind the fans council and getting fan sites like the Leaky Cauldron involved in this? Because this isn't something that's been done before, is it?
No, Matt and I actually joined the Harry Potter franchise last year, probably about midway through Goblet of Fire. And we inherited, you know, a lot of the wisdom about what it was about and what people were expecting from the game and the movies. And we had lots of research from the kids that were playing the game and all this feedback. And just because we were midway through the project, we finished Goblet of Fire. And I think at the end of it, we kind of did a lot of soul searching because we kind of thought, was this the right product to be making? was it what we wanted as sort of fans of Harry Potter to be going in the game? And it really struck us that, you know, the very people that we should be talking to get some of this feedback is the fans.
Mm.
And, you know, the best way of doing that is coming to you guys as the fan sites and talking directly to people who love the fiction. They're the best indicator of what should be going in this game. They're the people that should be telling us what's important to them. And so that was really the idea, is to sort of start speaking to people, giving regular updates on what we're doing in the game, and kind of getting people to feed back to us and saying, is that the right thing to be doing? You know, when people talk about magic and we say, oh, it's about stuff happening in the environment, is that the right thing? Or spells is the big thing about magic, is that the right thing? And because these are the sorts of questions we've had. So that was really kind of the thrust as to why we did it. And I think what we want to do is just keep that regular update of information going out to the fans so that they can feed back and say if this is the right stuff to be doing. And it's also about giving you guys some exclusives so you kind of feel a bit of the love from the Harry
Yay.
Potter team. So you can get some stuff that we're doing sort of before anybody else. And I think that's really important. You know, it's you guys are important to us. You're the people who are playing this. We want to make you happy. And we want to make sure that we're making the best product we can. So that's kind of really what it's all about.
I have to say, the fan response to this has been overwhelming. I mean, the Leaky Cauldron is a big website, as you know, and I knew that the response to this would be good, but just how phenomenal. I mean, I've sent you links to the threads we've got on our forum. And I crunched up some numbers this morning, actually, and we're now on our third kind of thread chatting about this, and altogether we've had over 34,000 views of everything that's been done.
And we're absolutely grateful for it. I mean, yeah, as Matt will contest, you know, it's really sort of helping us shape what goes into the game. It's really helping us sort of know whether the stuff we're doing is right, and any other things that we may be missing.
And you are reading this, aren't you, on the forums? And
absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. I mean, it is just phenomenal material that everybody's investing in the game, and, you know, it's really important that everybody understands we are looking at that and we are taking into account the views that are being expressed there, because, you know, it is really important. I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the fiction. I love Harry Potter as well, but, you know, I'm just one fan, and you know, there's millions of us out there. So, you know, it's really good to get everybody having their ideas and being able to digest that on the forums and make decisions while we're putting the game together, which we know people are going to appreciate.
Okay, first question then, and this is the one, the biggie that everybody wants to know about, and that's flying. Will the gamer have at least a tiny opportunity to fly on something, be it a broomstick, a thestral, or something else they can grab hold of?
I think we'd really love to do it. I mean, we did flying last year, and it was one of the most well-received bits, the dragon flying level in Goblet of Fire. But what I would say is this year we're really trying to bring the Hogwarts experience alive. It's the centre of the fiction for everybody. You know, it's the biggest piece of feedback we get is about magic and Hogwarts and the characters within that, and having that kind of immersive fan experience, being able to wander the corridors. And that for us is just an absolutely enormous amount of work. We've got about 120 characters on our list that we're trying to build. There's at least 70 plus rooms in Hogwarts that we're trying to build. There's the grounds, the Herbology greenhouses, there's Hagrid's hut. It's just absolutely tons for us to be doing. And then we have to tell the story.
Yeah.
So we have to include Grimmauld Place, we have to include the little whinging and the Ministry of Magic. These are all the kind of areas we're completely concentrating on, and without which we wouldn't be doing the fiction, the Harry Potter experience and Order of the Phoenix any justice. So I think flying is on our list. It's just slightly lower than those things.
Right. So it may be in there, it may not, but it's not through lack of intent or wanting it.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I think if Matt got his coding fingers on, I'm sure at 4 in the morning some night, he'd probably go out there and do it.
Absolutely. I have every intention of trying. we have got, because we read a lot of the stuff from the fans, we have actually got some designs, like paper designs, for a lot of those, but it is really about where we're investing.
Mm.
So it really is, if we get the opportunities, then we can try and dive in and get it done, but we've got to focus on the bits that are really going to give that Hogwarts experience that
we've all
been craving.
Yeah, because we want to do, you know, every member of the DA, we want to represent that fictionally true. We want magic in every room in Hogwarts, and, you know, like I say, it's just a huge amount of work, and it's kind of a balance. So, I mean, if everybody on your fan site turned around and said, you know, I just don't care about magic in Hogwarts. We want flying instead. You know what? We might change tack. But hopefully, I think we're on the right track with Hogwarts this year.
Yeah, the idea of the open Hogwarts is still the number one thing,
isn't
it?
That's the number one. I mean, I have to say that more than anything else, they want flying. So on behalf of the fans, because they'll flay me alive if I don't say this. With regard to the actual technical side of the game, the fans want shorter loading times, because that, especially when you're playing on a PC, that can get pretty frustrating. Like, you just kind of little picture of Harry and it says loading screen, and you want to get onto the next stage. So, is that going to be possible?
So what we're actually planning this year is to have no loading visible at all to the player. That's the real aim for us. It's a real technical challenge, and we've really focused the team around solving that challenge. So the idea really is, from the point you put the disc in to the point you finish the game, you shouldn't have ever seen it load.
And that's on all versions of the game?
That's on all console and PC versions of the game. Now, that's the plan, and that's what we're working towards. So it's definitely something we want to keep you in the story. You know, when you go from Little Whinging to Grimmauld Place, we don't want you to come back out to a menu and then wait for a load and then go back in. What we want is the story to cover that kind of loading time.
Make it much more fluent and flowing.
Yeah, so from the minute you put it in through the front end, that's part of the experience. We want that to be part of the fiction as much as anything else. We want to go straight into how the movie begins, and then that leads you into your first level. Story will take you from one location to another. It's not levels anymore, it's locations, to explore. So that's the way that's where we're planning to do it. So it's a seamless experience, a fictional experience that you're part of and you never leave from start to finish.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Okay, OWL exams, Matt. Can they take OWL exams? And if they can, what will that entail?
Well, we're certainly looking at OWLs and the impact that they're having on the students. But because you're playing as part of the whole thread, you know, obviously just waiting, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, waiting till the very last moment to do my OWLs, you know, playing for 15 hours and then, oh, I get to do an exam, I haven't had time to revise for. That's not going to be as great as it could be. So what we want to do is actually bring the classes into the game experience. So that you've got the opportunity to go and do some of the classes in Hogwarts. We've focused on a few specifically to begin with, and hoping to grow that as we get more confident with our development schedule.
And when you finish your OWL, do you get your mark? Like Jo does on her website now, you get a little printed certificate.
We're certainly, while you're doing the classes, you will get rated as if it were your OWLs.
Oh, right, okay.
So you're kind of doing your mocks, so you can get better and better and better.
So you can throughout the game, you can keep playing, keep retaking until you get outstanding in absolutely everything.
With it being an open world game, you've got to kind of almost divorce yourself from the ones we've done before. You know, the castle is open.
Mm.
You know, at the end of the day, you can go in and out the classes when you want. You can take missions from different people when you want. So, you know, that's the way it's kind of going to work. It is properly open.
Right.
It's not just like kind of in, I guess, in Chamber of Secrets and Philosopher's Stone, it was open, but you could go to one person and then that would launch their classroom, which would then be done and then you've gone to With this, it's kind of, once you've unlocked a classroom, that classroom is unlocked. Once you've unlocked a location, you can keep coming back to it.
We're really trying to get all of this stuff in there so that you can actually have the fiction. It also gives you a quest that sets you out to go and explore Hogwarts.
If we kind of explore a bit more the whole idea of this, it's Hogwarts Endless Day, isn't it? Exploring Hogwarts, because this is one thing that really came back out in the forums, was give us back our Hogwarts. And I know you've already gone into detail about it, just how much detail we're going to get now with Hogwarts. You can just expand on that. Just what are we getting with the Hogwarts Endless Day?
We read through the fiction and we've really pulled out a lot of these details and really, you know, if there's a cool bit in the fiction, we've tried very hard to find a way of getting it into the game. The Endless Day is very much, once I've completed the story part of the Order of the Phoenix, all of Hogwarts is still available.
Right.
For me, I think the amount of stuff that we're putting in Hogwarts, you can spend, I mean, if you want to, you don't have to go off and try and deal with the DA and so on. You could actually spend the time messing around in Hogwarts, but there's so much that you...
So Hogwarts is going to be open for the entire game, And then you can you don't just have to follow the story thread itself. No, you can go off and off on a tangent and do what you want. And then at the end, when the actual game is finished, you can then still go back and carry on and spend as long as you want in Hogwarts.
The biggest thing for us really, as I kind of said earlier on, is Hogwarts and Magic are the two biggest areas of feedback we've had from our research year on year. And that kind of, we've really sort of thought, okay, Hogwarts, everybody wants to be part of Hogwarts. They want to go to the classes. They want to see the people that they're seeing in the books and in the films. But they also want the authenticity of the actions that you do. So, you know, there's no point fighting dog bogs, much as they're part of J.K. Rowling's world. You know, they want to do what's in Order of the Phoenix, which is obviously things like the Ministry of Magic or training at the DA in the room requirement. So we're making all of the stuff in Hogwarts that you see in the books and the films. I mean, that's really what we're about. And that, for us, the magic is about, you know, what you see in the Leaky Cauldron itself, you know, with the chairs stacking themselves, you know, and brushes sweeping up, or in the Burrow where dishes wash themselves. You know, it's that kind of magic. That's Harry Potter magic. It's not big special effects. And so we've littered Hogwarts with all these enchanted items that you have to go and discover. That, for us, that's what we feel Hogwarts is about. It's about magical things happening in the world. And so you just go through Hogwarts at your leisure. You can leave the narrative to one side if you want. You can just explore every room in Hogwarts.
And how much of Hogwarts and the grounds can you explore? I mean, have you literally got all, is it 7 floors of Hogwarts? And towers and dormitories and grounds and the Whomping Willow and Hagrid's Hut and the forest. I mean, what can you see? Can you do all of that?
We absolutely have Hagrid's Hut. We have the Herbology greenhouses.
Inside Hagrid's Hut and inside the greenhouses?
Well, Hagrid's not there for the beginning of the book,
yeah.
So you certainly can't get in the early stages of the game. Whether you can at the end is...
Stop, Matt.
I'm not allowed to say. I mean, for Hogwarts, we really have tried to get, you know, the open experience, and we've looked at the movies and we've pulled out all the locations there because they're repeated continuously. They're big running themes in the book, so we've got all the key locations have been taken out of the fiction, taken out of the movie, recreated in the game, and we've connected almost all of those using scenes and sets from the movie and
It's been an absolutely enormous process because people are starting to see the movie Hogwarts more and more. So for them, that's what Hogwarts is, right? They kind of have gone through every movie and gone, okay, that room goes to that room. And then they've double-checked it with the fiction. And we ended up with this board with post-its on where we moved the rooms around until they all kind of roughly fit together. So we actually made a map of Hogwarts. And we kind of went onto the set. They've got a miniature. I say it's a miniature. It's about 20 foot high. Of Hogwarts, and we met the Hogwarts castle expert on the film set, and literally just anything we can do to make that Hogwarts that you've seen, all the locations you see repeatedly throughout, you know, the Great Hall, the courtyards, of which there are 4 courtyards.
But yeah, I mean, we have gone all out for picking out the details. I mean, one of the things that just went in very recently, which I'm so happy is in there. I get happy about the little things. But in the entrance hall. And if you watch Chamber of Secrets, when Crabbe and Goyle have their cakes and fall asleep, Harry and Ron drag them into a broom cupboard that's off the entrance hall. We've got that broom cupboard. I mean, it's just a small thing, but it's really nice. You know, it really feels like when I'm watching the movies now, for me, when I'm watching the movies and I go in the morning and I have a go on the game, and it's like, oh, yeah, look, there's the entrance hall. Oh, right, there's the cupboard where Rita Skeeter goes and interviews Harry. You know, all of those little details, we're trying to, as hard as we can, to get them in the game.
And just to confirm, all of this is authenticated by Jo herself, isn't it?
Absolutely. Everything we do.
Yeah.
Everything we do.
I mean, we literally write all the scripts, all the concepts, and we send them off to her, and they go through the various agencies, Warner Brothers, Christopher Little Agency, and then Jo herself reviews them and feeds back on them. So she corrects anything that she thinks we're doing, which is you know, out of character or not what she would want from the universe.
Yeah.
What I'd say this year is actually we've been probably stricter than anybody else because, you know, Matt and myself, when we were talking about the project to begin with, we wanted to get this real authentic Hogwarts to the fiction and
it has
film.
To be her Hogwarts, doesn't it?
Yeah. And we, you know, really has been this mantra of fiction first and just nothing second, you know, film and fiction. And if we can't find it in there, there's got to be a really damn good reason why we're putting it in there. So it's you know, it's the fiction that you all know and love. There's nothing extra.
Yeah, I tell you how much we've gone for that. I mean, we had the very, very first pass of the concepts before we'd got the fan sites involved. And we sent those off, and those came back with preliminary approvals. But we looked at the fiction again, and we started to get some of the feedback, and we went and redesigned some of the missions because they weren't fiction enough. So, you know, we replaced some of the missions that we'd had approved to get them even closer to the world that everybody loves.
Mm.
So, you know, we're beating ourselves as well to make sure this is...
We're definitely our worst critics this year.
But that's good, because it's one thing that really came across to me when I came back here, when I originally came here in August. It's just that you're fans. You're not, you know, people just sitting in the corner of thinking, oh, Harry Potter, we can make a load of money out of this. It's, this game is truly being made by fans of the book. And I think, you know, for me, that was the most kind of heartwarming thing of all, really, because you know you're going to put love into it, attention to detail. And it's, like you say, it's the little things, the little magical things that make it magical, for want of a better word.
I mean, I love working on Harry Potter every day. I mean, it is like, you know, a dream job. I mean, you know, I spend time looking at the fiction, reading the fiction over and over again. And I come
watching the films.
Watching the films reasonably.
How many times have you seen the films, Matt?
I really can't count. I've bought them 4 times each.
Matt's visited all the locations as well, haven't you, Matt?
I have. Oh, my God, I should tell you about some of that.
Go on.
I first went to the movie set, I mean... Obviously, I'm going as a member of VA. I'm supposed to be, you know, the consummate professional. But honestly, I got the opportunity to go and see Umbridge's office, and we had to walk through the Dada classroom. And I couldn't help myself. You know, I was really professional. Then just when everybody had sort of walked to the edge of the room, I had to stop and shout, "Expecto Patronum!" and wave my hand around, at which point everybody else looked slightly embarrassed. But, you know, how many times are we going to get to do that?
Well, it's what all of us would do if we walked into it.
Yeah, where else can you go to work and, you know, you have a meeting where you end up arguing about, you know, what exactly was Susan Bones' motivation for joining the DA? You know, because obviously we're doing that to try and work out what we should do as Susan Bones' reason for you to go and recruit her as a member of the DA. But, you know, it's great to go in there and you have all these passionate people arguing about it. And, you know, I swear sometimes you think there's going to be a fight breaking out over the strangest details. Look, where is Dobby? Where is Creature? You know, we've got to, you know, all of the details like that, we just end up having these wonderful arguments about it. It's great, great fun.
And debates about whether it's fictional. We just couldn't do this job if we didn't love it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It just wouldn't work. The amount of time and effort that goes into making a game, I don't think people understand quite how many people are involved, how much it takes to motivate a team the size we have.
Mm.
You know, if people weren't motivated by their love for the game, you know, it just wouldn't go.
And there's a big team working on this, isn't there? When I came last, I think it's 85 people.
It's ever growing, actually. We've taken on much more people recently as well, so it's probably closer to 90 people now, I suspect.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many of us that just kind of just want to make the best Harry Potter experience they can, and that's why we've gone back to this Hogwarts idea and this authentic idea, and the fact that the guys have just built Hogwarts from the blueprints. We've scanned all the kind of the actors and actresses. We're trying to get as many of the actors' voices in the game as possible. It's just anything we can do to bring that closer to what you've seen in the films and what you're seeing in the fiction. That's really what we're all about this year.
Moving on from the exploring Hogwarts, one thing the gamers are really, really interested in is because Order of the Phoenix introduces us to so many new areas and locations, will they also be able to explore Grimmauld Place, the Ministry of Magic, Little Whinging, you know, these other new exciting areas, obviously not in the detail that we're going to get Hogwarts.
Well, I think, you know, we're definitely going to include those locations, and certainly for Grimmauld Place, I mean, we read some of the fan feedback, and we had initially a couple of missions when you returned at Christmas in Grimmauld Place, but we sort of reevaluated that and turned it into the go and explore Grimmauld Place level. So there's a lot of things for you to go and find in there. And, you know, I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories about some of the contents of Grimmauld Place.
Yes.
And we've tried to write some of that into the script. So
is there going to be like a big locket kind of hanging around somewhere?
I'm not allowed to say. You'll just have to go and have an explore of Grimmauld Place and find out.
Oh, so we really need to explore Grimmauld Place. Okay.
I think there's going to be some things in there that the fans are going to be able to really appreciate.
Excellent.
There's definitely a couple of visits to Grimmauld Place, isn't there, in the game?
Oh, absolutely.
It's one of the first places you'll obviously come across, and it's where you kind of meet up with Sirius for the first time.
Yeah.
And that's just where you learn some of your initial spells and hook up with Ron and Hermione before you go to Hogwarts. And then, of course, we return, as Matt says, at Christmas, where there's some more things to be added.
So talking about spells then, we're really keen to learn new spells actually. What spells are we going to have in this game? Are we going to have any new ones?
We're looking at around 10 to 14 spells.
Right.
In that kind of area. There's some spells which are very, very familiar, and one or two that are new. We have very much focused on what is in the book first, because, you know, again, some of the stuff we got from the fan sites were that, you know, that us making stuff up is not what you guys appreciate. You know, having the stuff from the book and being able to see some of those effects and be able to hold that magic in your hand, as it were, is really important. So we've focused on those as the primary spells and only expanded that spell set where it's absolutely necessary. But J.K. Rowling has approved all of the spells that we're putting in the game.
Are you allowed to say any new spells?
I mean, we've got, well, what I'll say is it kind of divides down two ways. We've got spells which allow you to explore and discover things in the environment. So we talked about it earlier on, where each room has got magical discovery in it. And so there's the kind of what we call our environmental spells, if you like, which allow you to kind of, like, we've got Wingardium Leviosa, so we've had that in various, you know, games before. So something like that is an environmental spell.
Right.
But we also have, because there's a lot more, whether you want to call it dueling or combat, there's a lot more of that in, obviously, the Ministry of Magic, and we want to bring that through with the Inquisitorial Squad and some of the other things that happen around Hogwarts. So we've got spells that relate to, you know, that kind of activity, the kind of combat stroke dueling, if you like.
Right.
So there's kind of, like Matt says, there's 10 to 14 spells, but they split down into two groups, really. So I think with the combat spells, they're more likely to be the new ones. And there's a few in the environmental spells, aren't you?
Am I allowed to get an exclusive?
Oh,
Pottercast 65 went by in a blink.
It went by in a blink. We needed our Sue's.
I miss the Sue. Where is the Sue?
Sue is out having fun family time with the family. The best people to have family time with.
No, where are our families, John?
Our families, well, mine is sitting up in the TV room waiting for me to return and probably play a board game of sorts, maybe a little Harry Potter scene.
Mine's in Atlantic
City. I don't know.
City.
I don't know if we have enough time.
How are they going to play Harry Potter scene with you?
With me? Oh, they're pretty good at seeing it themselves, especially at HP scene.
I want to have an HP shout about movies.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Because, you know, I think you're able to read the cliff notes of the Harry Potter books and do well with the Harry Potter scene game. Not that it's not a whole lot of fun, but it's not a whole lot of difficult.
No, it is not. I want like a master edition of one of these things. You know?
Yeah, that would be fun. Someone should do that.
I mean, if they were as hard as the Wombats.
As hard as the Wombats, but as cool as the Scenic format.
Or Shout About Movies.
Or Shout About Movies, certainly.
So much more fun than Scenic.
Yeah, well, not that the Scenic game isn't fun. I mean, obviously they had to appeal to a huge audience, and the hugest Harry Potter audience isn't always the ones that are, you know, the most knowledgeable. Those people are online, but there's countless more people who would never step online for Harry Potter, so.
Who are those people and why? Why do they exist?
Yeah. I know, come on, come to the site, come click around, come it'll be a blast.
It's fun, leakynews.com. Of course, if you're listening to this, then you already have done that, so tell a friend, that's your challenge this week. Tell one friend
it's always fun to find Harry Potter fans in real life and be like, oh, do you go on any of the fan sites? And find the people that don't. And then think, you know, ask them, you know, really figure out how into the books they are. Because there's a lot of people who are really, really into the books. And believe it or not, just haven't bothered to Google Harry Potter and realize that there are so many people online that love it just as much as them or more, and that they could be interacting with.
Yeah, I almost dated somebody like that.
Really?
Yeah, I met him, and he was a huge Harry Potter fan, so into it, knew so much about it, and I'm thinking to myself,
yeah.
Oh, this is going to be fun, because I'm going to say, what websites do you visit, and he's, you know, an adult, so clearly he'll go to the Cauldron, and he'll know the site. This would be hilarious. What sites do you go to visit? Oh, I don't go on the web.
I know.
And it was perfect. I was like, oh, that's nice, you know.
It's so fun to find those untarnished Harry Potter fans. Not that all of you are tarnished.
You're
just,
all
they're
tarnished.
They're very new and innocent.
You're like
to
brown
it.
Silver.
No, it's like the words, you know, like flint or, you know, shipping or sparts mean nothing to these people.
Well.
And it's wonderful. And it's so fun if we could get them to come online, but maybe they're better
well,
off.
Well, here's
not.
What you I have an idea. We have a whole new way. I'm not sure if we told you. We did tell you about this on podcast.com, but here's another way. There's a really cool new way to listen to podcasts. If you have your phone and you're just kind of traveling around and you missed your podcast, program this number into your phone under podcast podlines. The number is 818-688-2780. That's 818-688-2780. You call that number. It will download Pottercast and play it into your phone with no other anything, no other software. Your phone doesn't have to be MP3 compatible. All you have to do, it's like a phone call with us talking into your ear.
But it's not downloading, though, is it? It's just like listening to like an answering service, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's downloading somewhere. Podlines must download it.
Oh, well, they have
it. But you're not putting it onto your phone or anything. It's basically just listening to it play.
Yeah, like you were calling, like, somebody and they're just talking to Harry Potter podcast.
It's a Potter hotline, is what it is.
Basically.
Should charge $4.99 a minute.
$0.99 a minute.
It's not what.
And if you text a certain number to it, they'll send you the Super Mario ringtone.
No, don't start
or,
that.
London Bridges.
Anyway, 818-688-2780. Make sure you put that in your phone so that if you're missing us and you're away from your computer, you can just call it and hear us.
And from the UK, don't forget the plus.
Well, I don't know how the hell that works, but...
Well, it's just like any other phone number, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. It's just a phone number. It's a U.S. phone number.
You know, if you want to listen to podcasts in the most expensive possible way, you can internationally call it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Remember that these standard rates do apply, so if you have a cell phone that has unlimited nation calling or unlimited calling...
Yeah, wait till your free nighttime minutes.
Yeah, totally.
Wait for your free nighttime weekend minutes.
I love it. I've done it while I'm in the car when I've forgotten my iPod and I want to listen to the show.
Call
in. And it's great because I have a little entry in my phone book, and I call Pottercast. But don't let you be confused with the Pottercast voicemail.
No, that's a whole different number.
Whole different
you know what
number.
That number is?
702-42-LEAKY.
That's a good
702-42-LEAKY, and that reminds me that I need to renew it before it expires.
Yes, we don't want anyone taking and squatting on that number.
Yeah, totally. Okay, in the UK, it's 207-193-2872. 207-193-2872. And there's a plus in there somewhere.
Good breath. There's got to be a plus in there somewhere.
We are going to take a little break from the MySpace stuff.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we can do this week's shout-outs, but we're going to take a little break from the blog challenge because, to be honest, we owe you guys some prizes and we're a little bit behind. So
yes.
We're going to send those out first and get ourselves set for the
everybody holiday. Is getting a whole full page of Chamber of Secrets stickers. That we have, that are very nice.
Okay.
Isn't that a good prize?
I have no idea what that is.
No, like stickers that you were to put like in a little sticker book. From Chamber of Secrets.
Where did you get, we don't have those.
It's a very good prize.
They don't, okay. Anyway, guys, don't listen to John.
I want
you know
stickers.
How we said that we would be online getting phone calls on Thursdays?
I love that.
We keep forgetting and we apologize. Oh my goodness. It's very hard adding something else to our schedule. And every week at like 9 o'clock on Thursday, we all like call each other and say, was anybody on the line?
See, I think we're going about this the wrong way. I think what we should be doing is, it's hard enough to get us all together to record the intro, the outro, the conundrums, the mailbags, the other this and that nonsense. But to come on one more time is just like, oy, Dios. Okay, so what if maybe we post it on podcast.com like a half hour, an hour in advance of when we are all set and scheduled to record and just say, hey, if you want to bother us, call and bother us, and maybe every once in a while we'll take an interrupted call.
I think we have... Oh, I see what you mean, when we're going to record.
Yeah, like just like right now, like we're doing the wrap-up, and if we see somebody call in and they're not being too obnoxious, maybe we can click
John,
them in.
Do you remember what happened at the last call-in?
Yeah, but that was when we had Matt Lewis on.
No, but the last call-in that was just us.
Oh.
It got a little nuts.
I guess that did kind of bog us down.
It did. It was really hard to focus. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to try this again this week and see if it works. Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Somebody will be on the line from Pottercast, and we're going to get this down pat. And you call in, and we will talk, and the best phone call will get played, we promise. We've just been a little bit nuts. Also, remember to get silking, because our holiday shows are coming, and that means more holiday songs to everybody, and the bar keeps going higher and higher. So
those silkers are getting even more talented every darn episode.
Every time, it's going to be great.
Good stuff.
We've also been getting a lot of questions about how to download old episodes. If they're not on the iTunes feed when you subscribe, you have to go to podcast.com and find the episode and download them. Because we just can't keep it on the feed.
iTunes limits it. iTunes will cut you off if you have too big of a feed.
No, they won't.
Yeah, they do. They cut off after a certain count, I'm pretty sure, or a certain kilobyte of the feed.
We don't let it go up that high, but...
Yeah.
We can't leave a lot of stuff on there. So whatever episode you want, you get the direct download link should be working from podcast.com, and you're good.
It's all good.
Oh, this is the boringest wrap-up ever.
Oh, it's just a very informational
wrap-up.
We
had a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
We have lots of announcements. What a wonderful day to start the day.
What?
Announcements.
John, it hasn't been with you and me for a while.
I know it hasn't. It's been without me for a while because of being all sick and stuff.
And then it's been without me for a while for my busyness.
Like that one episode that you made it sound like I was so sick, like I was pregnant or something. All secretive.
Well, you had mono, and I didn't want to tell people without your permission.
You didn't want to tell people until 10 minutes into the show when Canon Conundrum.
I know.
Okay, I'll tell them now.
I didn't... Well... The secret, guys, is that it wasn't 10 minutes later. It's just that we recorded it at a separate time. And at that time, I wasn't feeling so bad about telling people what John was up to.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know.
No biggie D.
No big D. But you're better now, John?
I'm feeling fine, other than my little runny nose from being up where it's cold. But I can't hardly complain, because it's been pretty good weather for this time of the year in Ohio right now. It's good stuff.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to get out of here, because it's my night to decorate my apartment.
Oh.
Yeah, exciting.
Well, fun. We decorated today, too.
Christmas time is
here. Yep, good old holiday season, I guess. From all of us, all of you, hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And if you're in the UK, I hope you ate some good food on that same day we did, so everybody can have full fun bellies. For all of you returning back to school from a few months hiatus, hope you have a good few weeks back.
We're so boring.
We are hilariously boring.
Okay. Well, seriously, we have to get out of here.
Oh, and about time too.
Hope you all enjoyed the EA interview.
Hope you had fun. Thank you, Donna. Thank you.
Next week we'll have part two.
Next week is part two. Next week more Canon Conundrums and plenty more. Always surprises from your Pottercast crew.
We've missed it.
Sorry, you three.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.